Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Bitcoin Sovereignty Through Mathematics by Knut Svanholm is a concise nonfiction book about Bitcoin, money, and the philosophical implications of absolute scarcity. Written for readers who want an accessible entry point into Bitcoin's core ideas. It explains why Bitcoin is treated not simply as a digital asset, but as a monetary system grounded in mathematics rather than institutional trust. The book connects scarcity, inflation, mining, and monetary credibility to broader questions about sovereignty, state control, and the role of money in human society. Its purpose is not to provide a technical manual or a detailed engineering explanation of Bitcoin. Instead, it presents Bitcoin as a conceptual break from traditional money and uses that lens to examine how sound money changes incentives, value storage, and individual autonomy. The result is an introductory but philosophically pointed work that aims to make Bitcoin understandable without losing sight of its larger cultural meaning. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Bitcoin is absolute scarcity and a mathematically bounded monetary asset. The central idea in the book is that Bitcoin introduces absolute scarcity, meaning its supply is fixed by protocol rather than by human discretion. This matters because most traditional monetary systems can expand supply through policy decisions, which weakens money as a store of value over time. Svanholm treats Bitcoin's 21 million supply limit as a foundational feature, not a marketing slogan, because it changes how people think about saving, pricing, and long-term value preservation. The book argues that scarcity is not just an economic property, but a mathematical guarantee enforced by the network itself. That distinction gives Bitcoin a unique position among monetary assets. It cannot be diluted in the way fiat currencies can, by framing scarcity this way. The book helps readers understand why Bitcoin is often discussed as sound money, and why its value proposition depends less on speculation than on predictable supply rules. Secondly, money is a store of value and why inflation weakens its function. A major thread in the book is the claim that money must reliably preserve purchasing power if it is to serve as a good store of value. Svanholm uses inflation as the main contrast point. When a currency steadily loses value, people are pushed toward spending, speculation, or complex hedging strategies instead of simply saving. That makes money a poor substitute for time and effort, since earned value can be eroded by monetary policy. Bitcoin is presented as an answer to this problem, because its supply cannot be expanded arbitrarily, giving it a fundamentally different relationship to time. The argument is not that Bitcoin automatically solves every economic issue, but that it redefines what money can do when it is no longer vulnerable to dilution. Readers come away with a clearer distinction between transactional currency and durable monetary savings, which is one of the book's most practical conceptual contributions. Thirdly, separating money from state control as a problem of sovereignty. The book's philosophical edge comes from its treatment of Bitcoin as a separation of money from the state. In Svanholm's view, state-managed money concentrates power because control over issuance also means control over purchasing power, incentives, and long-term wealth distribution. Bitcoin disrupts that arrangement by creating a monetary system that does not depend on political permission to function. This is where the book's title becomes especially important. Sovereignty is not presented as abstract ideology, but as a practical consequence of having a form of money that cannot be altered by central authority. The reader is encouraged to see monetary independence as part of broader personal autonomy. That does not mean the book ignores institutions, but it does challenge the assumption that money must be rooted in state power. This theme distinguishes the book from purely technical Bitcoin guides because it asks what changes in society when monetary rules become mathematically enforced rather than politically negotiated. Fourthly, mining verification and why Bitcoin security is tied to computation. The book also introduces readers to the basic logic of Bitcoin mining and network verification without drowning them in technical detail. Mining is presented as the mechanism that secures the system and makes the scarcity rule credible. Instead of relying on a central issuer, Bitcoin uses distributed computation and consensus to maintain the ledger and verify transactions. This makes the network difficult to manipulate because altering the record requires overwhelming the system's security structure. Svanholm uses this framework to answer a common criticism that Bitcoin mining is wasteful. The broader point is that the energy and computation used by the network are part of what makes its monetary guarantees enforceable. In other words, security is not an incidental feature, but the basis for trust. The book's treatment of mining is valuable because it connects an often misunderstood technical process to the larger monetary argument, showing how code, incentives, and security jointly support the system's credibility. Lastly, Bitcoin as a lens for rethinking human institutions and monetary philosophy, beyond Bitcoin itself. The book uses the subject as a way to question familiar assumptions about money, value, and social organization. Svanholm suggests that truly scarce money forces readers to reconsider human habits built around inflationary systems, including short-term consumption, debt dependence, and political management of value. Money is sometimes described as an amplifier in the broader Bitcoin discourse, and this book reflects that view by implying that monetary design shapes behavior far beyond finance. Because of that, Bitcoin is not treated merely as a tool for traders or technologists. It becomes a philosophical test case for how societies organize trust and exchange. The book's appeal lies in this broader framing. It is as much about the nature of money as it is about Bitcoin itself. That makes it useful for readers who want not only a primer on the asset, but also an argument for why money matters at the level of civilization and personal agency. In conclusion, Bitcoin Sovereignty Through Mathematics is best suited to readers who want an accessible, idea-driven introduction to Bitcoin rather than a technical handbook. It will be most useful for beginners, curious investors, and readers interested in monetary philosophy, Austrian economics, or the social consequences of inflation and sound money. Its practical value lies in clarifying the logic behind Bitcoin's fixed supply, mining-based security, and appeal as a store of value. Its intellectual value lies in showing why Bitcoin is often discussed as more than software or speculation. It is presented as a monetary design that changes how people think about sovereignty, trust, and institutional control, compared with many Bitcoin books that focus heavily on price trading or protocol mechanics. This one stands out for its philosophical framing and its emphasis on scarcity as the key innovation. It is concise, readable, and conceptually focused, making it a strong entry point for readers who want to understand why Bitcoin matters in a broader historical and economic sense. For that reason, it works well as a first serious Bitcoin book and as a companion to more technical follow-up reading. If you would like to support Knut Svanholm, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.